This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Barbarian's Mate, a sci-fi alien romance by Ruby Dixon, narrated by Holly Jackson and Mason Lloyd. Chapter 1. Josie. I'm the last single woman in the entire ice planet. I watch Tiffany and her new mate Saluk head off to their cave as everyone celebrates, but I'm not really in a celebratory mood. I'm worrying. I'm not a big fan of stressing about things I can't change, but this is something that concerns me. Being the singlest single woman that ever singled? It's concerning. Am I going to have a cave by myself? Am I going to be stuck in someone else's cave like a reject? Am I going to have to listen to everyone else make out and know that I'm never going to have a mate because Harlow can't fix the stupid surgery machine? I stare glumly at the fire, thinking about my stupid, stupid IUD that won't come out, even though it's been over a year and a half since we landed and my cootie's supposed to fix that sort of thing. Around me, everyone's happy and celebrating, but I don't feel like sharing in their enjoyment. It wasn't so bad when I wasn't the last human alone. I didn't feel like a total reject then. Now? The cheese stands alone, and I do feel like a total reject. It's a feeling I'm kind of used to after being dumped from a half dozen foster homes growing up. I've never had family to call my own, and the people that wandered into my life wandered right back out again just as quickly. But I don't dwell on the past. Shit happens to everyone. Here on the ice planet, though, I felt like I was part of a family, at least for a while. There were 12 human women, and the Saqui only had 4 women to their 30-something men. To them, we were special, a gift from the stars to be cosseted and taken care of. I was part of a group for once, a family. Then, one by one, the girls started to pair off with mates. First, Georgie, then Liz, then the others. Stacy, Nora, Ariana, Harlow, and all the others. One by one, they paired up with big, hunky, utterly devoted blue guys who think that their fated mates can do no wrong and dote on them at every turn. And now they're all popping out babies and having the bestest time ever on the ice planet. It's kind of hard not to be jealous. And it wasn't so bad when it was me, Claire, and Tiffany left out of the humans after the initial rush of matings. That was all right, because it wasn't just me being rejected by my cootie, the symbiont that keeps me alive and plays matchmaker. But then Claire got a mate. And then Tiffany got a mate, too. I'm the only one whose cootie has gone out to lunch. The cootie's supposed to be looking out for me. It's supposed to keep me healthy at all costs, fixes up my body so I can withstand the harsh environment on the new planet, and it's supposed to find me the perfect mate. Once it does, I'll resonate. My cootie will vibrate once it gets near the perfect male so I can know that it's chosen, and then we can have really intense, repeated sex until we make a cute, fuzzy blue baby. But I don't resonate, and I know it's because of this stupid IUD stuck up in my you-know-what. You can't get pregnant if you're on birth control, and you can't resonate if you can't get pregnant. It sucks to know the exact reason why you're warming the bench and not being able to change it. I stare into the central fire pit. So much for not being a gloomy Gus. It's hard when you see everyone getting everything you've ever wanted. A mate, family, babies, and you keep getting passed up. A small movement catches my eye and I look up from the flickering fire to see a familiar face scowling in my direction. Hayden. Ugh. My least favorite person in both of the Saqui caves. He looks pissier than usual, which is kind of a feat for him. If he wasn't such a dick, maybe he'd be handsome. Maybe. He's big, of course, and heavily muscled like all Saqui men. He's got the big, arching, curling horns jutting from his forehead like a ram on crack. He's got pale blue skin, and his forehead is covered with thick, platy ridges that should make him look like a mutant, but only emphasize how strong the rest of his features are. And he's got the long, black hair of the Saqui, but he wears his shaved on the sides and in one extra long braid over the top of his head and down his back. He might be someone's type, but he's not mine. His tail flicks angrily at the sight of me as if just looking in my direction pisses him off. Our eyes lock and he crosses his arms over his chest as if daring me to get up and confront him. Whatever. I make a face at him. I don't know why he's got a hate boner for me, but I'm tired of it. I'm a little pleased and weirdly disappointed when he stalks away. I'd almost welcome a fight with him, except he doesn't really fight. He mostly spits out a few choice words, glares a lot, and then storms away when I irritate him enough. I nudge Farley, who's settling in next to me with her paint pots. She's doodling a festive red line down her arm. So what's with Hayden lately? Hmm? She dabs a brush in red and then paints a dot on my arm. He looks more angry than usual, I tell her, and obediently turn my arm toward her so she can paint an accompanying blue dot next to the red one. Oh, he was very sour when he found out you went to the main tribal cave alone. He yelled at Taushan for many hours. My eyebrows go up. Why? He hates me. He should have been glad that I'd taken this scary, dangerous journey so recently. He'd probably been hoping that I'd fall into a snowdrift and never come out again. She shrugs and holds my arm, painting a ticklish circle on it. He is protective of females. He thinks it is foolish to risk them. Oh, barf. So he's a chauvinist. I was perfectly fine. Sure, it was a little scary, but I handled it. I went because we didn't have a choice. Tiff, Taushan, Saluk, and I were visiting the Elder's Cave, a crashed Saqui spaceship from several hundred years ago, when Tiff noticed a big storm coming in. We decided to send out runners to warn both the South Cave, my home, and the Main Cave. Tiff had hurt her ankle, so Saluk stayed behind with her. Taushan took the longer walk back to the South Cave, and I headed to the Main Cave to warn them despite the oncoming blizzard and despite the fact that I'd never traveled by myself before. I'd been pretty proud of the fact that I made it and saved the day, darn it. Sure, I could have died in a snowdrift, but I didn't. I found the cave all on my own and showed that I'm not useless. I'm happy, and I'd do it again. Farley draws a bigger blue circle on my arm with her paintbrush. The Saqui like to paint their bodies with bright swirls when they celebrate, and I love it. It makes me happy just to look at it, and Farley knows she has a willing canvas with me. She doodles on my arm a bit more, then holds onto my wrist to keep me still. Yes, but humans are weak. He says that risking your life means risking more than just one life. It is potentially robbing another male of his maiden kits. I gape at her, then realize she's parroting Hayden's words. Good thing I'm only worth my vagina to him. Joke's on him. My girl parts have a permanent no-vacancy sign on them, alas. What is vagina? Farley asks. I do not know this word. Never mind. I probably shouldn't be teaching Farley inappropriate human words. She can't be more than 14 years old. He's just a jerk. Always has been and always will be. What is yerk? She draws another circle on my arm, this time a sickly green. You're fun to paint on, Josie. You are white like Shamfi's belly. The colors show up nicely. Great. I'm being compared to her pet Davisti. A jerk is a man who thinks with his male parts. It totally applies to Scowly Hayden. I don't care what the others say. She giggles at my words. At least someone finds me amusing. Nope. I can't go down that path mentally. I need to think about happier things. Things like the baby Tiffany and her maid are rather noisily making back in our cave. I do love babies, and Tiffany's my best friend here on the ice planet, so I'm totally going to volunteer to godparent the crap out of that poor kid. I stare at the fire, contemplating living circumstances. If Saluk and Tiffany are getting it on 24/7, they'll need a cave of their own. Farley finishes decorating my bared arms and picks up her paint pots, heading toward someone else. I remain where I am, the paint drying. No one comes over to talk to me. It's not like there's a lot of us left in the South Caves. Half of the cave has already moved back to the main caverns. The ones left are probably not feeling that celebratory, if Taushan's sad mood is any indicator. I don't blame him. He lost out on the girl, and the only one left is me. Or Farley. But she's a kid still, So he's either got to put the moves on me or wait for Farley to grow up. No wonder he's depressed. I'm kind of bummed myself. I don't want to go back to the cave because I'm afraid I'm going to see a lot of Saluk and Tiffany, which would be awkward. Maybe I'll go borrow a blanket from Kira and hide in one of the now empty caves. I get to my feet. Something soft clinks against my leather boot. I look down, and there's something gleaming in the firelight on the tip of my shoe. I pick it up, frowning. It fell out of my leggings. What on earth? It looks like a plastic little Y of sorts, which is weird. There shouldn't be any plastic here in the Sakwi Caves. Did it get stuck in my boot from when we were at the Elder's spaceship? But if so, how... I gasp as I realize what I'm looking at. It's not from the Elder's ship. It's my IUD. Somehow my body has forced it out. My queen must have been silently working on pushing it out of my system. I clutch it in my hand, my heart hammering with excitement. This changes everything. Now I can get pregnant. Now I can resonate. I can have a mate. I can have a family, a happy ever after. I can have everything I've always dreamed of. I don't have to wait for Harlow to fix the surgery machine back at the Elder's ship because my cootie decided to be awesome after all. Thank you, Quee. Thank you. You're the best. I take back all the awful things I said about you. I look around eagerly at the people in the main cave. Who's going to be my mate? There's several males in the tribe that are attractive, and all of them are nice. Except Hayden. I'm not picky. I'll let my cootie choose someone for me. It knows best, after all. It's going to pick the perfect male for me so we can make sweet little babies together, and I can live a life of joy and happiness. My mood has totally changed, and I'm so happy I could shout with pure joy. Nearby, Vaza catches my eye and gives me a speculative look. To my relief, my queen remains silent. Good. It's not desperate. Vaza's older, and he's tried hitting on everything with tits. He's seated next to Beck, and I'm glad that my Kui isn't making a sound for him either. Cootie, you are one smart cookie. Hassan is probably my number one draft pick at the moment because he's sexy and all alpha, and I'd be down with that. At the moment, he's nowhere to be found. Toshin either. Both of them are probably still moping after losing Tiffany. Well, hello. I'm perfectly willing to be a consolation prize. Time to find my guy and make his day. There's two elders talking off to one side, but I'm pretty sure one had a mate back in the day, and the other could be my grandpa. Just to make sure, though, I stroll past them. Nothing happens. Oof. No problem, cootie. We still have lots of man meat in this cavern before we run out. Anyone seen Hassan? I ask.
He's in his cave, packing,
Vaza says. Super. I jump to my feet and head in that direction before Vaza can decide if he wants to hit on me or not. Come on, Hassan, be my mate. Of course, even if I don't resonate to Hassan, there's always the guys back in the other cave. I immediately think of Rokon. He's hot, and he's nice. I'd be down with that. I head for the cave that many of the single hunters live in, and the privacy screen isn't up. Yoo-hoo! I call out, my voice sweet. I'm excited, and I push away thoughts of Rokon. The other cave seems so far away right now. It's going to happen tonight. I can feel it. Rokon's going to lose out because he's not here. I feel like my mate is here. My chance. I'm going to get my happy ever after. Tonight, my life starts. Tonight, I get my family. Tonight, I'm no longer a reject. Hassan pops out of his cave, a confused look on his face. His gaze settles on me.
Yes, what is it?
I smile at him, but nothing happens. Rats. Hassan was hottie number one on my list. Just thought I'd say hi. Have you seen Toshin? He narrows his eyes at me as if trying to figure me out.
He is here.
Can I say hi to him, too? Might as well kill two birds with one stone.
Is this a human custom?
I keep smiling because even his puzzled look is not going to get me down. Not tonight. Yes, it is. He grunts and heads back into the cave. I admire his ass for a moment because, darn, it is a rather nice ass. Not my ass, though. Oh, well. I'm sure mine will be awesome. Toshin's got a tight little bod himself, and... And he pops out of the cave a moment later, giving me an eager look.
Oh, Josie, what is it you need?
My chest is just as quiet as before. No resonance, no nothing. Damn it. I make my excuses to him, citing a sudden need to find a potty and hurry away. Who's left? There's Vadran talking to Harek, and while both are middle-aged, I could learn to love me some May-December relationship action. I sidle up to them, pretending to listen to their conversation. Nothing. Is my cootie on vacation? Is it tired because it worked so hard to get rid of the IUD? I put a hand to my heart, worried. I've approached every guy in the cave that's single. Maybe my mate's back at the other tribal cave. That's disappointing, but I guess I can wait another day or so. Rokan might be the one for me after all. I picture him and start to imagine what our kids would look like. As I walk toward the fire, my chest feels funny. I look down and my small boobs are vibrating. My entire chest is, actually. Holy crap. Resonance. Yes. I knew it would be tonight. I gasp, clutching my leather tunic tighter to my body so no one sees my boobs jiggling except my mate. My chest continues to vibrate, and as it does, the noise grows louder. I'm resonating. I'm motherfucking resonating. I want to scream with joy. I look around with excitement, trying to see who it is that set my cootie off. Who did I forget? Who did I walk past that made my cootie pay attention? Did someone trigger me on a second chance? Or... I turn around, and Hayden standing right behind me, frozen in place. My eyes widen, and I clutch my vibrating boobs. No. Hell to the no. It's not you, I whisper. He looks down at his chest, and then at me. Then I hear it. A matching thrum. A low purr. He's resonating. I'm resonating. For a moment, I hope that he's somehow decided to resonate to someone else, that there's another woman somewhere nearby, and she's going to spring from the shadows and yell, "Surprise!" that this is all just a bad joke. But then Hayden takes a step toward me. My cootie gets even louder. My chest is vibrating so hard with the force of the resonance that it's making my nipples ache. I hold my breasts down and look up to see Hayden's reaction. He's staring at me. There's a look of such anger and agony on his face. He doesn't want this. I don't either. I'm devastated. This is my worst nightmare. All I've ever wanted is a family, someone that loves me, a happy ever after. Resonating to Hayden? My dream is completely destroyed. Chapter 2. Josie. It's happening. Oh, God. I never thought it would be like this. This intense. This immediate. And I never thought it would be to him. I don't know what to do. I stare at him blankly, holding my boobs like if I can get them to stop, I'll somehow stop resonating to him. I wanted resonance. I wanted it so badly. I want a mate and babies. I should have been more specific. Anyone but him, cootie. Let's take it back. I'll go with anyone else but him. Please. But the stupid cootie in my chest only purrs even louder. Hayden's eyes narrow at me, and he takes another step forward. His fist presses to his chest as if he's trying the same bargaining tactic with his own. "This isn't happening," I blurt out. "This isn't us." He scowls and grabs my hand.
"We need to talk."
He drags me toward his cave, the one he shares with Saluk and Taoshen. I try to pull my hand out of his grip, mostly because his touch is... Okay, it's making my hormones go wild. I'm freaking out. Touching Hayden's hand, no matter how warm or strong or calloused it is, should not make my non-existent leather panties go damp, but that's exactly what's happening. I'm not going anywhere with you, I hiss at him. He stops and turns to look back at me like I'm the crazy one.
You want to do this out here?
I don't want to do anything with you.
You don't have a choice. This,
he says, and thumps his chest hard with his free hand,
has made our choices for us.
He's not wrong about that. Hayden moves in closer to me.
So unless you want to resonate in public and all the things that entails, come with me so we can talk.
He's so close to me that I can feel the heat of his big body. How did I never notice that Hayden's enormous? That he towers over me, all brawny blue muscle and smoky-scented skin? Damn it, Cootie, your timing is shit. Your taste is shit, too. Fine, I say faintly. I'm coming. Because if I don't go with him, I worry that I'm going to, you know, come if he steps any closer. And the thought makes me blush. To my relief, he doesn't grab my hand again, but puts his on my back, guiding me toward his cave. If anyone notices us departing together, no one says anything or stops us. I'm guessing everyone's either drunk or not paying attention. It's a small cave, and sometimes there's nothing to do but gossip. If someone sees me going to Hayden's bunk with him, it'd be all over the caves in the morning. Then again, so will our resonance. Shit. Shit, shit, I don't know what to do. I'm in a haze of worry and hormones and doubt as he leads me into his cave. So Luke isn't there. He's busy nailing Tiffany in my cave, but Tashen is. He's seated on his furs, sharpening his blade. He looks up at the sight of us entering together. My cootie's purring a mile a minute at Hayden's closeness, and I'm sure I have a deer-in-the-headlights look on my face.
What's going on?
Tashen asks, getting to his feet.
Get out, Hayden tells him bluntly. Josie and I need to talk.
But...
Out,
Hayden snarls, moving forward and looming over the smaller male. I clutch at the neck of my tunic. I should be appalled at how ferocious Hayden's being, but I'm kind of aroused by it. He's so decisive. Oh, you jerk of a cootie, how could you do this to me? I thought we were friends. So far, not loving this whole resonance thing. I give Tashen a mute look of apology as he frowns at both of us and scurries out of the cave. Then it's just me and Hayden. My new mate, if my cootie has anything to do with it. He turns slowly, rubbing a big hand over his face. And then he looks at me.
This is not what I wanted.
I'm a little stung by his words. Hearing that you're someone's last choice on Earth, or not Hoth, stings no matter who's saying it. Like I wanted this? I hate you.
That does not matter any longer, he says bluntly,
beginning to pace. It's like he's twitchy and can't stay still. I know how that feels. I'm ready to crawl out of my own skin.
Our queens have chosen. We are mates.
I shake my head. It's like my entire world is crashing down around me. This is a nightmare I can't wake up from. I don't want to be your mate. He turns on me, and his face is filled with anger.
We do not choose, Josie. The Kui chooses.
Yeah? Well, our cooties are assholes. I don't want this. I don't want you. He just rubs a hand down his face again. I don't even get how this is possible, I say brokenly. I thought you had a mate. His eyes narrow at me. He stalks away a few feet, and then his hands go to his hips. His tail is lashing wildly, and I watch it with a kind of horrified fascination. It's clear Hayden doesn't have a mate, or else I wouldn't be stuck with him. You can only resonate to one person ever. Once a cootie makes up its mind, there's no changing it. I sink to my knees. I feel utterly helpless and alone. I don't know what to do. All I know is that my symbiont has arranged a marriage with the person I hate most in this world, and I'm completely at its mercy. Hot tears spill down my cheeks, and I swipe at them. I'll allow myself to cry over this for one night, and then I need a plan.
Hayden, I thought you had a mate. Josie's simple, brutal words cut to my heart, dredging up terrible memories. I've never had a mate, but I did resonate to another female. But she died, along with my Kui and along with any hope I had. I never imagined in all the long, lonely years since that the new Kui in my chest would also select a mate for me. I have never hoped to have a mate or a family or a warm body curled against mine in the furs. And yet, I look at Josie's round human face and realize I still will never have those things. It is a cruel, cruel Kui that has chosen her as my mate and me as hers. I watch as she sinks to the floor in the cave, and tears spill from her eyes down her cheeks. She is weeping at the thought of being mated to me. She hates the idea so much that she cries. The thought fills me with helpless frustration and self-loathing. I watch her, unable to offer comforting words. I have nothing to say to her that will ease her pain and misery. Already my body reacts to her nearness, stiffening with excitement at the thought of a mate. My cock aches under my loincloth. This aching need to claim a female to the point of mindlessness? I've felt this before with Zala, and hated every moment of it. I gaze down at her misery. I have seen that before, too. Zala had been devastated at the thought of resonating to me. Josie is no happier. And me? I am filled with utter terror. Humans are fragile creatures, ill-suited to live here amidst the snows. They must be carefully watched, guarded at all times, and kept warm with fire. They shiver at a stiff breeze and must have their food burned over a fire. Some are a bit more hardy, like Rahosh's liege, but Josie? She is smaller than the others, and when I look at her, I see the tiny size of her wrists, her small hands, her delicate shoulders. I do not know what I will do if I resonate to another female, only to have her die. It will destroy me. I turn toward the wall of the cave and clench my hand against a rocky outcrop. It is taking all of my willpower not to grab Josie and pull her to my furs where I can protect her from anything and everything, to drag her under me and claim her. I reach out to touch a lock of Josie's brownish-yellow hair, and she flinches away. I am the only male to have two mates, and yet have never touched a woman.
"This is awful," she sobs, struggling to her feet. "You hate me, and I hate you."
She hates me. The words cause an ache in my chest that outweighs the ache in my groin. She thinks I hate her. I deserve that. I have pushed her away with every opportunity. The truth is that I do not hate her. I could not. She is sunlight and warm smiles. She is laughter and happiness, and those things are lost to me. I have not been happy since Zala died, cursing my name. And every time I look at Josie's face, I have known this day would happen. I have known there was a connection between us from the day I picked up the small, broken human female out of the strange cave they arrived in and carried her back to the tribal caves. I knew then that there was something between us, and I have fought it ever since. Not because she is not worthy, but because humans are fragile, and I am terrified at the thought of losing a mate. Again. I frown at the thought, and that is when Josie looks up. Her jaw stiffens at the sight of my frustration, and she glares at me. "Don't look at me like that. I would have picked anyone but you. I can't believe I've wanted this for so long, and now this!" Her lip wobbles, and the tears start to fall again. Each teardrop is like a knife in my chest. "Stop crying," I tell her, and it comes out more harshly than it should. She dashes a hand over her cheeks and finds the strength to glare at me again. I will take her glares. I will take anything but her tears. "We must be sensible about this," I tell her, and step closer. My entire being reacts to her nearness. The Kui in my chest hums its song so loudly I think the entire cave can hear it. Josie gives me another irritated look and sniffs. "Of course we're going to be sensible." "Good. Then we are thinking along the same path." My cock surges against my leathers, desperate to bury inside her and fulfill the bond that resonance has brought between us. My entire being aches with the need to possess her, and the resonance is quickly taking over my thoughts. I can see nothing but Josie, smell nothing but her delicate scent, imagine nothing but running my fingers through her soft mane and pressing it to my lips. I cannot help myself. I reach out and touch her soft hair. I will be gentle, Josie. She skitters away from me as if burned, her eyes going wide.
What?
Does she not grasp how a kid is created? We will go slow if this is your first time. I do not tell her it is mine as well. The look on her face changes to one of disbelief. Her jaw drops and she clenches her fists at her sides.
Are you mental?
She hisses the words at me, and then looks around as if to make sure no one else has seen.
I'm not sleeping with you.
Sleeping? She truly does not know how a kit is made. We will not be sleeping. When a male takes a female, she presses her small fists to her forehead.
Oh my God, I know how babies are made, you twit!
I frown at her anger. There is no point in getting frustrated. This is not my choice either, Josie, but resonance cannot be denied.
I don't care!
She slices a hand through the air as if cutting something.
We are not mates. I am not sleeping with you.
Irritation is flooding through me, a potent mixture with the ache of desire and the onset of resonance. I am a mix of emotions, all of them strong, and my patience is nearly gone. I cross my arms over my chest.
Then what would you have us do? We're not going to do anything!
I give her a skeptical look. I have seen too many resonances to think that this plan will work. There are some pairings that fight the inevitable, but they always give in. Then there is my unfulfilled resonance with Zala, which haunts me to this day. But if she thinks we can just ignore the call of our quees, she is mad. That will not work. She presses a hand to her forehead again, and strangely enough, I want to pull her against my chest and comfort her. Josie's frustration and unhappiness is distressing to me, even more so because I am causing it.
I need time, she says after a moment. I can't handle this tonight. I can't.
Her words chill me. It reminds me of Zala and Zala's refusal to answer the call of resonance. But that was many, many turns of the seasons ago, and Zala is long dead. Josie is here, and Josie is now my mate. It will not turn out the same. It cannot. I will not survive it. But Josie's pain eats at me, even though my every instinct is demanding that I pull her into my furs and touch her until her no becomes yes, then she would hate me. And I could not bear to have my mate's hatred. Already the desire to please her floods through my body and my mind. The need to care for her and make her happy foremost in my thoughts. I nod slowly. It will be as you say. I will not touch you until you ask me. She bares her teeth at me, furious.
You think I'm going to come to you begging for you to touch me? You have another thing coming to you, buddy.
I tilt my head. Why does everything enrage her? You say you want to wait. I will leave it in your hands.
Don't throw this all on me. You mean to tell me that if I said, go ahead, you'd toss me down on your furs right this moment? Me?
Of course. I am puzzled by the question. Why does she think there is a choice? The Kui has decided. It does not matter what I want. Nor does it matter that the thought of touching her makes my cock ache, or even the sight of her makes my blood pound in my veins. Already I cannot separate my need for Josie from the resonance. She is my mate, therefore she is mine. Nothing else matters. She throws her hands in the air.
I'm done here.
She turns to walk away. Where are you going? Her soft mane brushes over her shoulders, and my fingers itch to grab a handful of it, to pull her back against my body and bury my face against her soft skin. Everything I am rebels against the thought of her walking away without fulfilling resonance. I clutch at the wall again for support.
Away,
she says, and there's desperation in her voice. She hugs her small body and doesn't turn to look at me.
Say nothing of this, all right? I'm sure it'll come out eventually, but I just need time.
And because she is already my mate, I can refuse her nothing.
Very well.
Josie leaves my den, and it feels as if a fire has gone out the moment she disappears from sight. I am filled with a keen sense of loss so great that it staggers me. The ache in my body has not decreased, and my quee song seems to have a lonely sound to it before it steals in my chest. It is as if it misses its mate as well. I stagger to my furs and drop to my knees, tearing at the ties to my loincloth and leggings. If she will not let me touch her, my hand will have to do for now. Yet even as I pull my cock free and take it in my grip, I know it will not be enough. It is never enough.
Chapter 3. Josie. I sleep in Chompy's cave that night. It's not that I wouldn't be welcome back in my own cave, but Tiff and Saluk are probably having a throwdown to end all throwdowns, and I don't want to listen to it. Not tonight. Not when my body's freshly aching and full of need from my own resonance. I could stay at someone else's cave, too, but that would involve questions I don't want to answer. I hugged the furry Devisti close and let it lick the salty tears off my cheeks. Tonight, I'll let myself cry. Tomorrow is a new day. When I wake up the next morning, I'm a little disoriented. The smell of fresh Devisti poop far too close nearby reminds me of where I spent the night, and I crawl out from under the borrowed fur blanket and stretch. My entire body feels feverish, and when I press my thighs together, my pussy feels wet. Well, isn't that just ducky? I suck it up because I'm done crying over my lot. I'll figure something out. Somehow. The rest of the cave is busy, and I can hear the sounds of people rushing around. I fold up the blanket and open the pen so I can get out. Chompy pushes his way past my legs and bounce trots away, likely to find his favorite person, Farley. The thing's more loyal and more smelly than a dog. Cute, though. It's hard to be sad watching his fuzzy butt bound away, and my mood lightens a little. "Where's Josie?" I hear Tiffany ask. "Is she packing?" I emerge into the main cave, and there's a flurry of people cramming stuff into baskets, packing sleds, and adjusting backpacks. Looks like I slept late. Today, we're taking the hike back to the main cave and reuniting with the rest of the tribe. I should be excited. I can't wait to hold all the babies and talk with all my friends again, but my mind is on other things. Against my better judgment, I glance around the cave, looking for a familiar pair of horns, dark blue skin, and a surly attitude. I don't see him anywhere, though, and I feel a pang of disappointment, though I'm pretty sure that's just my cootie reminding me of what it wants. "There you are," Tiffany says, and hurries over to me with a backpack and my fur wraps. Hers is already strapped to her back, and she's wearing her traveling furs. "Come on. We're not dragging sleds, so we need to hurry up and move ahead with the hunters. They're waiting on us." "Aren't you bright-eyed and bushy-tailed?" I tease her as she hands me my fur wraps and helps me into them. "Here, I thought you'd be yawning this morning." Tiffany giggles. Giggles. Oh, my God. Practical, can-do Tiffany is giggling like a schoolgirl at my teasing. "Where did you sleep?" she asks. "Oh, I just found a quiet spot in the back and curled up," I tell her. "Didn't want to bother anyone." "Silly. You know you could have come back to the cave." "And listened to sex noises all night as they tried and failed at being quiet? Gosh, no thanks. Especially not with my own cootie being all hormonal. Didn't seem like a good idea." She helps me tie the strap of my backpack under my breasts and then pauses. "You're okay with this, aren't you, Joe?" Her cootie blue eyes, so brilliant in her pretty brown face, look at me imploringly. "I don't want anything to come between us as friends." My poor heart nearly breaks all over again. "Don't be silly, Tiff. I love you, and I'm happy for you and Saluk. You're going to have a family, and you have a mate that loves you. How can I not be beside myself with joy?" "Because it's been just us for a while, and now I feel like I'm leaving you behind." She gives me a crooked little smile. "You know you can live with us in the new cave, right? I'm sure Saluk won't mind." "Don't worry about me," I tell her brightly. "Something will shake itself out." And again, I resist the urge to look around for Hayden. Living with him would be a nightmare, I tell myself, even as I squeeze my stupid thighs tightly together. He's grumpiness personified. Tiffany casts me another worried look, so I hug her. She doesn't need to worry about me. She's got enough on her plate. I squeeze her hand and then pull her toward the front of the cave. "Let's find our snowshoes and get going. I can't wait to see everyone at the other cave again." She laughs but allows me to tug her along. "You just saw them a few days ago, silly." "Yes, but they've got babies, and babies seem to grow up overnight. Plus, I've totally got babies on the brain. Always have. I love their sweet scent, the way they clutch at you like you're the most important thing in the world, the trust in their eyes. I've wanted a baby of my own so badly because I want to do right by my child. I want it to grow up in a world of love where parents never disappear, people only touch you with kindness, and there's nothing but joy and welcome and love at home. I want my child to have what I never had. And I don't know if my child will get that if Hayden is the father. I don't know if I can be mated to him without losing it. He's everything I've never wanted. I thought my cootie would pick a mate that would be kind and gentle and caring. Instead, I get the Saqui Oscar the Grouch minus the garbage can. As if my thoughts have summoned him, we head to the front of the cave and Hayden is there, waiting next to Saluk. His gaze immediately goes to me and he drops the snowshoes he was holding and storms away into the snow. For some reason, I feel a pang of regret. I mean, I also feel a pang of lust deep between my thighs. Thanks, cootie. And my chest starts to thrum quietly with resonance, but I also feel sad. Tiffany brightens at the sight of Saluk and practically skips over to him, despite the heavy pack on her back. I follow after her, picking up the discarded snowshoes that Hayden has abandoned. They're mine. He was waiting for me. I don't know how that makes me feel. I move next to Tiffany and sit down on a rock beside her so we can put on our snowshoes. There's several others waiting at the front of the cave, and behind us I can hear Kira talking with Ihako, the baby, crying. Farley's back there too, chattering up a storm, and ahead are Tashen, Hasen, and if I peer out hard into the gray day, I can barely make out Hayden's retreating back. Is Hayden leaving? I ask. Saluk says, nodding. He kneels down and begins to strap Tiffany's snowshoes to her boot for her, like the sweetheart that he is. He said he is not in the mood for company, and will scout ahead. Oh. My cootie doesn't like this and gives a disappointed little purr just as Saluk breaks one of Tiffany's leather shoe straps. He gets up and walks away to get a new one, and as he does, thankfully, my cootie gets over the fact that Hayden's not here and shuts up. Tiffany peers around. What was that noise? Uh-oh. What was what? I rub my stomach. I'm going to have to pretend indigestion unless I want to be found out. I'm not ready to see Tiffany's sympathetic expression when she realizes I've resonated to Hayden, of all people. I thought I heard resonance. Her brows draw together and she glances around the cave entrance and then looks at me. Was it you? Girl, please. I force out a laugh. You sure it wasn't your man nearby? I gesture at Saluk, who has his back turned to us. His tail is flicking, and I see her gaze go to his butt. I can't blame her. He's got a fine butt. His cootie might not be satisfied after last night. Tiffany ducks her head and gives another girlish giggle, and I can hear her own resonance begin in her chest. Jealousy gnaws through me. I'm happy for her. I really am. I'm just sad that I'm so miserable. I rub my own chest thoughtfully. Saluk returns a moment later, and immediately Tiffany starts humming like a cat in heat. She giggles again, and Saluk's chest takes up the song. And me? Me, I want to barf. They're so giggly-giddy with happiness that it's driving me crazy. I hate that. I want to be happy for her. I really do. But I'm lost in my own thoughts, and none of them are excited about the prospect of waking up next to Hayden for the rest of my life. I just don't know what to do. Our secret resonance, the dirty secret I don't want to tell anyone about, it lasts until all of midday. The walk to the main tribal caves is a half a day by most hunters' standards, but humans have to walk with snowshoes, which makes us slow. Add in backpacks and the sleds full of goods behind us that are being dragged along by the men while the women and elderly walk beside. We are a slow-moving, widespread group. Tiff and I hang out somewhere toward the front, walking next to Saluk and Tashen. Tashen, bless his heart, is chatting up a storm as we walk and doesn't even seem to mind that Tiffany's holding hands with Saluk. He seems to be in a good mood, and I hope it's because he's just naturally a cheery person and he's not pinning his hopes on me, because that would be awkward. Hayden remains far ahead, a blue and leather blur on the horizon. I'm glad he's staying away, so my cootie remains silent. After a few hours of walking, the twin suns are high in the sky, casting their weak light over the snowy ground, and the chilly air becomes a little too warm. We take a break in the shade of an icy cliff, and Kira comes to sit next to me and Tiffany. I take her fat baby from her arms to give her a break and spend the next while cuddling and kissing her sweet round face. Kira looks more tired than Tiffany and I, and I'm sure it's because of the baby. Kai's a pudgy little thing, fat and healthy at 2 months old, and wriggles constantly. Kira has no backpack, but she looks wiped. "You want me to carry this little inchworm for the next bit?" I ask Kira, pressing a kiss to Kai's cheek. The baby's a pale, pale blue, but has almost completely human features, except for the soft, downy covering on her skin that the Sakwi have. She grabs my nose and gives a delighted baby giggle, as if it's the most fascinating thing ever. "Would you mind?" Kira sounds wiped. She gets heavy, and the snowshoes aren't helping. "Of course I don't mind. I'll hand her back if she gets to be too much, I promise, knowing I'll do no such thing. This baby is all joy and bright smiles, and I want to hold her forever." I kiss her tiny little nose, not even caring a bit that she grabs my face again and digs little nails into my lip. Everything she does is cute. "Don't look now, but here comes Grumpy," Tiffany murmurs. "I'm sure he's coming back to yell at us." I hold Kai a little tighter and avoid looking up, even as I hear snow crunching with approaching feet.
"Why are we stopping?" Hayden asks, his tone turly. "The sooner we get to the cave, the sooner the females can rest. It is not safe out in the open."
"They are tired now," so Luke says, his voice reasonable.
He doesn't get up from his spot next to Tiffany.
"Let them rest for a few minutes. There is plenty of day left to walk."
Hayden snorts with derision. My stupid cootie chooses that moment to start purring. Loud. Like, super loud. Like it's turned on by Hayden's grumpiness. Oh, crap. I hunch over the baby for a moment, hoping no one will notice. "Josie?" Tiffany whispers. I guess it's too late to fake indigestion again. I sit up and look over at Hayden. He doesn't look a bit tired, all big muscular arms and irritation. I scowl at him. "Really? You couldn't wait like 10 minutes for us to keep on going? You had to come back and set me off?"
"Me? You are blaming me for this."
The look on his face is both irritated and incredulous. "Josie?" Kira asks. "Don't... wait. You guys resonated?" "Not by choice," I say, angry. "Hayden came back on purpose to force my hand, didn't he? And we're not doing a damn thing about it. I'm not his mate, and he's not mine." "Oh, my God," Tiffany breathes. "What are you going to do?" "Pray for a miracle? Hope a rock falls on him? Something?" I look up, and his gaze is burning into me. My nipples prick, and I feel my thighs quiver, and I bite back a groan. I'd say I'm not going to do anything, but I don't think my cootie is going to allow it. "I don't know," I say honestly, and hold the baby closer.
Hayden. The group is somber as we trudge through the snow. No one seems to know what to say to me, and Josie is pretending I do not exist. The mood changes as we crest one of the last hills between the tribal cave and our location, and Rokan jogs forward. "Ho!" I nod at him and give him a half-armed embrace of greeting. "My friend, it is good to see you." He nods and scans the line of people straggling distantly behind me. "I am glad you have returned, all of you, especially the females." He gives me a wicked grin. "It is lonely in a cave full of males and babies, and you at the South Cave keeping all the young females to yourselves." It takes all of my power not to shove him down into the snow. I am shocked at the surge of jealousy that powers through me. He does not know of what he speaks. "They are no longer unmated," I growl at him, and then I storm past. I ignore the confused question he sends my way and head on to the caves. Let the others answer him. I am in no mood. I continue on until I am in the caves. There are no family members to greet me. There are many friends, but my mother and my father and my brothers died in the Kui sickness of many years ago. I am alone. Vectal approaches me, smile wide. "I am glad to have all of my tribe home," he says, glancing behind me. "Are the others close behind?" "Close," I agree, terse. "Which cave is to be mine?" The Hunters. I will not be staying with the Hunters, I tell him, and I feel a surge of bittersweet pride at being able to say the words. My Kui has chosen a mate. I will need a cave for my family. The look of surprise on his face is gratifying. Who, Josie? His eyes narrow, but that is the only reaction he gives. He is my chief, and he is wise and knows when to be silent. After a moment, he nods. Come then, I will show you. We have several caves that have opened up, thanks to Harlow and her machine. I pick out one of the larger caves for my new home. It's toward the very back of the cave system, tucked away in the new section that has been cut from the smooth walls. Here, the rock is rougher and small rock icicles hang from the ceiling, but the cave I select is roomy and private and will hold a large bed of furs as well as plenty of room for hunting equipment and supplies. It is a good cave. Josie cannot help but be pleased, even if she must share it with me. Vectal leaves when it is clear I am not in a mood to talk, and I set down my pack and unroll my bed furs. My cock stirs at the thought of Josie lying in them, and I resist the urge to take myself in hand again. I did 3 times last night, and it did not ease the ache. Only claiming my mate and planting my kit inside her will make the need go away. Or the death of my Kui. I rub a hand over my chest, my mind full of bad memories from many, many seasons ago, back when I was newly made a hunter. Of Zala and her pleasure mate Derlin laughing by the fire, feeding each other. Of the look of dread on her face when she realized her breast was resonating to me and not to her pleasure mate. She was many years my elder and much in love with Derlin, but my Kui did not care. It wanted her. It hit me hard and fast, and I was young and foolish enough to assume that she would comply with the demand of the Kui. But Zala was always complicated. She pushed me away, said she needed time to think, and because I had been a foolish boy, I gave her time. I watched from afar as she went to her pleasure mate's furs every night. I watched with longing as she ignored me, trying to avoid the demands of her Kui. I remember approaching her, determined to mate and slake the burning need in my body, only to find her in the arms of her lover. And because I had been young, I turned away. I waited for her to come to me. But then the Kui sickness came. Here my memory is full of clouds. I remember nothing of this except returning home from a hunt, aching and miserable with unresolved resonance, my breast humming with an angry song. Zala was not there to greet me. She was sick in her furs, and I assumed it was from Kui sickness. I went to join her, but I never made it. I collapsed in the main cave, burning with fever. Vectal has told me that I was one of the first sick, but one of the last to have the light go out in my Kui. It must have struggled mightily. Others died within a day or two of the sickness, like Zala, like Derlin, like my mother and my father. There was nothing worse than waking up and hearing only silence in my breast. I shake off the memory with a shudder. I lived. I survived. I was given a new Kui, and I lived through it. I am whole and healthy now, and my new Kui has given me a mate, Josie. And this time there is no Kui sickness to keep her from me. I unpack my things and then go to the storage cave to gather more furs for bedding. The humans are small creatures who need much warmth and not very strong. Josie is tiny, and I frown, thinking of how she carried Kira and Ayahako's kit all the way to the cave, along with the pack strapped to her back. She will be exhausted. She will need food and hot tea and a warm bed to sleep in, even if she does not want me in it. She is my mate, and the urge to take care of her is overwhelming. I grab additional things from storage. Leather, pouches of dry tea, salted divisti. I will replace it at a later date, but for now my mate needs food. When I return to my new cave with supplies, the main cavern hums with happy voices. The others have arrived, and the sound of happy chatter is a constant hum in the air. I think Rook and his mate Harlow, who live at the Elder's Cave more often than not, have the right of it. With everyone returning, there will be faces everywhere and no privacy. This thing between Josie and I will play out before all. At the thought, another surge of fierce possessiveness rises in me. Whatever she may think, she is mine. Josie is standing in the cave when I return, her pack at her feet. My Kui immediately begins a pounding beat in my chest at the sight of her, and my blood pulses hard with the need to claim her. But her face is drawn and tired, her small shoulders hunched with exhaustion. Her Kui starts to sing to mine, and she looks down at her chest, confused, then jumps with surprise when I set my bundle down. "What are you doing here?" Her small human brows draw together. "They said this is my cave." "The cave you will share with me," I agree, keeping my tone even, though it is a struggle. "We are mated." Her small pink mouth pinches into an angry line. She rubs her forehead, and there is exhaustion on her face.
Do not do this, Haydn. Please. I'm too tired.
I did not say I would climb into your furs. I know you are tired. Her refusal of me rankles, but I expect it. I must learn patience. My quee sings on, unaware of the tension between us. I must remember that this is different. Josie is not Zala to preen her pleasure mate in front of me. She is small and human and exhausted. Sit and take off your boots. I will build a fire and make some hot tea. There's a look of surprise on her small face, as if she didn't expect me to be courteous to her. Have I truly been so terrible to be around? If I snap at her, it is because she pulls me to her and it worried me. Now it seems my fears were not unfounded. She hesitates for a moment and then gracefully collapses in the furs with a little sound of pleasure. My cock tightens in response, but I ignore it, digging out the fire pit in the center of the cave. Someone has already lined it with round, smooth rocks, and so I set up a pyramid of dung and tinder and then go to retrieve a burning coal from another's fire. When I return, her boots are off and she's curled up and under the blankets, her small, pale face the only thing showing under the furs. Her eyes are closed and she doesn't stir when I move to the fire pit and blow on the coal, feeding it tinder until it becomes a flickering flame. I set up a tripod and a bladder to create the tea, but I suspect Josie will be asleep before it is ready. I glance over at her, and the urge to stroke her smooth cheek with my fingers overwhelming. What will she feel like in my arms? Zala was tall and wiry, as muscular as myself. Josie is nothing like her. She is small and soft and full of smiles that have genuine joy. Someday I would like for those smiles to be aimed at me.
You won't try anything, will you? Her words are a soft, husky murmur. Just because I'm sleeping?
I am offended at her words. Does she think I would crawl over her while she sleeps and shove my cock between her legs? My quee thrums harder at the thought, and I scowl to myself. I would never do such a thing.
Just checking, she says softly.
A moment later, I hear the gentle sound of her snore. I adjust my aching cock and my breechcloth and drop tea leaves into the bladder of water. I am disturbed by her ideas of what I would do to claim her. Does she truly think I would force her? Is that why she is so miserable at the thought of mating to me? Are human men like this? If so, she should be glad that she resonated to a Sakui hunter. We do not mount females without their welcome. I rub my chest thoughtfully. The purr there is both comfort and torture, but I am glad it is there.
Chapter 4. Josie. I wake up from an exhausted slumber feeling rather refreshed. And horny. God, so horny. My hand is between my legs and I absently cup my sex. The heat of my body seems to be greater there, and I'm a little shocked to realize that I'm so wet that my leather leggings are damp against my pussy. I push against the folds of the fabric and let them rub against my aching flesh, and a tiny moan escapes me. A breath sucks in nearby. I freeze. Shit. I'm not alone. What the fuck am I thinking? My eyes fly open and I gaze around the cave. It's dark, a small fire flickering in the fire pit. There are stalactites overhead, and the cave itself is much bigger than the one I shared back with Tiffany, the ceiling higher. Crap. This is my new home I'm sharing with Haydn. And judging by the breath sucking in, he's somewhere nearby and heard my little moan. Crap, crap, crap. I slide my hand out from between my legs and rub it on the blankets to get rid of the, well, pussy smell. I sit up with a yawn and decide to pretend like nothing is wrong. Thanks for letting me sleep. Glowing blue eyes watch me from across the cave. Haydn is there, his big, muscular body squatting near the fire on his haunches. I watch the tip of his tail flick near the stones, and I hope against hope he can't smell just how aroused I am, because that would be awkward.
How do you feel?
He asks. I watch as his shadow moves, and he pours me some hot tea into one of the shallow bone cups favored by the Sakui. He hands it to me. I take it, and to my relief, he moves back to the other side of the cave, even though he returns to watching me with that frank, possessive gaze. I cross my legs, careful to keep the blankets over my lap, and cup the tea in my hands. I sip it, still warm and spicy with flavor. I'm better, thank you. He grunts, but doesn't move. Nor does he say anything else. All right,
I guess it's up to me to break the silence. I feel like we should talk.
Why?
His voice is wary. Not a great start. Well, everyone seems to think we're mated. He makes a sound like a huff of frustration.
We are.
Oh, fun. Now I get to argue with him over this. I slurp my tea.